Hello, everybody.
Lovely to see you all. First of all, a shout out to Greg. Thank you for finally putting illumination grids here. It really helps with the validation of design. I'm a lighting designer. I'm not an engineer. And now I can give this to the engineer, and they can smile and stamp it. So this is great. Some of my old Radiance friends, some of these things I'm going to show you are going to be familiar, but there's a lot of new faces here, and I thought I'd just begin by giving you the context of these tools that I was very privileged to be part of developing over 10 years. So this is the Indiana School for the Blind and Visually Impaired, and the school for the Deaf campus. It's in the design process right now. It's about $500 million to do this. And thanks to Designing Visually Accessible Spaces, or DVAS, and the things that I've learned from them, I'm the lighting designer for half the campus and the low vision consultant for the rest of the campus. So what is DVAS, right? I'm trying to do both sides here. First of all, just look at these, this grid of pictures. These are indicators as to what may or may not be visible for someone with, let's say, mild low vision, moderate low vision, severe low vision, profound low vision. And your red lines imply, I can't see it. Green lines, I can see it. Right? Edges are a very important part of the hazard world, right? Because all off an edge into an abyss or down a staircase. And you see a difference between this is the actual scene of a subway station somewhere in the world. And this is me adding some lighting and changing the materials. And then what I end up with is a lot of green, right? I improve the visibility even for someone with profound low vision. Now, there's another tool that's built into this that we'll explore in a minute or two, and it's putting a region of interest, putting something closely around a potential hazard, and it will develop a score. So if it's one, it's very visible at that particular visual acuity. If it's zero, it's not going to be seen. And we're still working or trying to figure out the actual metric, but about 0.7 is possibly visible if you're talking with a friend. It may not be visible because part of your brain is, you know, following a conversation. So that's the context of the tool, is that we actually can put a number to the degree of visibility based on a particular low vision acuity. So here's a little primer on vision. So acuity, right? Acuity is the measure of the smallest detail which you are able to see. And if you hold your thumb out in front of you, your thumb is the width of about 1 degree. And within that, if you have 20/20 vision or log bar zero, depending where you are in the world, you should be able to see 30 black lines and 30 white lines. Vertical, all equally spaced, 30 cycles. This is spatial frequency, 30 cycles. So, if we then take you with 20/20 vision, and we give you a card like that to evaluate your vision, your acuity is not going to be as good, right? Because contrast affects your ability to see details. So we combine those two things together, acuity and contrast, and we come up with a contrast sensitivity function. I mean, this is known by for a lot of time. We've created our own based on research, but notice cycles per degree increase as you go from left to right, just like keys on a piano, hit the high notes. And contrast decreases from high contrast to low contrast, and end up with this curve. And it's interesting to note that someone with normal vision, if you look at the picture on your left, even in the center of vision, contrast has very little effect. Right? at the very high frequency end, the little stuff contrasts at a whole lot of effect. And then if we look at somebody with low vision, hey, they can't see that high frequency. And even in the center of their vision, contrast has significantly more effect. So these things get molded together into the algorithms that we use. And we move the sensor, we move that chart over and down depending upon the visual acuity that we're trying to represent. So here's another mock-up of it. If you could see 30 degrees, 30 cycles per degree, you'd be able to see this whole chart. But if we blur this using our software to 28 or 7.5 cycles per degree, everything else is obscured, right? Well, let's take it a step further. Whoop, that's really hard to see there. If we use our software and we run it over a Snellen chart, you can just make this out, right? And that's what it's about. It's not how clear it is. Can you just make it out? Really frustrating out of the competition, right? I say, can you see that? Oh, I'm not sure, right? Well, that's your acuity. H, maybe O. No, it's a D. It's an M, right? So that's what the software does. It obscures those things that are predicted not to be visible, and let's pass through those things that are predicted to be visible. So here is how the tools function. And it's a visibility prediction tool for various low visions. We take a radiant rendering, in this case, back of the subway station. Now, radiance has, as you probably know, the ability, if you use the rendering, the HDR image, and the mock tree, you can extract the three-dimensional data from the scene. Right? You can, per pixel basis, you can get the depth, the normal, and from that, we create the ground truth edges. So this is data mining the image and the octree. These are the things that you might walk into, or fall over, or stumble on. You then take the same image, and we run that blur effect based on a particular amount of vision, and you can see the corrugations on the railway car here, but they blur out as they become smaller and smaller and smaller, right? We then take this image and we run it for tanny edges. We're looking for the luminance boundaries, the places where there's a noticeable difference in brightness across the screen and finding its edges. Finally, we take the ground truth edges and we take the tanny edges. And we see where are lines in alignment with luminance and where are they not. And you can clearly see down here that there's no, there are no tanning edges. Therefore, we predict these lines of the edge, that edges, to be not visible with this particular acuity. That's the fundamental part of the tool. If I had an hour, we could go into great detail, but I've got my 20 minutes, 31 minutes. So I use this tool iteratively, and here's just a simple example of the iterative process. If I take a region of interest on this staircase, and I run it through mild, moderate, severe, profound, or any other vision that I want to put into the system. In this case, I have a score for severe low vision of 0.5. You can see there's a bunch of red lines in there. I can see the leading edge, but I'm going to be blurry going down the staircase. So in this case, I added edges to the steps with high contrast. And so, I get a better score. And then finally, I put a bullnose on the staircase. It's a reasonable contrast. And suddenly, that stairwell becomes visible. I could change the lighting, I could change the materials, I could change the shapes. It doesn't care, it's looking at luminance patterns. So let's take that leading edge of the worst step. It says it was like 0.37 visibility score. So I'm going to change the region of interest. So let's just look at the leading edge. And in this case, without changing much, it's not a great score, but the leading edge actually can probably be detected. So maybe you're not just going to fall into an abyss that you don't know is not there. So this tool, it's designed, at least I only ever use it in this iterative way to improve the visibility. It's not based on the width of a yellow line or something. You can use the architect's palette to improve the scene. Here's an example of how we currently design and its problems. This square, imagine it's a step or a platform. It has an 80% reflector on this face, and the other faces are 20% reflector. I put a light source up on the ceiling at some point, and yeah, I can see the step difference. I move the light source somewhere else, and suddenly that 60% contrast difference has disappeared. And this is how we currently design in many places. You know, the interior designer actually created more contrast than recommended for low vision. The lighting designer provided the 200 lux. But this was the outcome because we're not designing by luminance, we're designed by these other factors that don't really talk to each other. The Divas tool, I think, is a good step towards designing by how we see, using luminance. So here's the current situation. The blur approach was published 5 or 6 years ago. The current program or application that I showed you was published in the IAS glucose journal in 2021. The hard copy came out in 2022. It had a validation in it. We ran an even more extensive validation with a lot of really low vision people, and that validation validated what we're doing. So this stuff works. Bill Thompson was our member of the team, brilliant guy. He wrote the code for Divas. In 2019, he worked with Greg to streamline the Divas pipeline. Greg developed a layered image approach to make it efficient. Bill became ill. He could no longer look at a computer screen and could no longer code. He passed away earlier this year. So, this stuff is on GitHub. You know, it's there for you. It's public domain. The workflow can be simplified. We already have some of those things if somebody wanted to engage it. Add the impact of glare to visibility. That's we decided not to try to address that. It was too complex within our time frame. Extend it to mesopic and scotopic regions. We only deal with photopic right now. And calibrate it more precisely for visibility rather than just comparative purposes. So any member of the search team is happy to work with you. Okay, this is a totally different thing now. So I got asked to have a look at this bridge that's somewhere in Iowa in the United States. And that's how it looked at night, high pressure sodium, horrible. The store fronts and housing was closed on both sides of this river. Nobody wanted to go there. He said, Rob, can you make this an attraction for economic development? I'll give it a try. So all the drawings were done by hand. And you know, there's no AutoCAD or model to start with, so I said, just model this directly into Radiance. I've used Radiance a long time, so I'm able to do that. And I noticed that the elevations of the bridge actually were part of an arc, and that arc was about 10,000 feet, about 3,000 or something or other meters, was the point of the arc. And I know the width of the bridge, and it has these modules, and I know the width of the module, and the module was 0.026799 degrees of that arc, right? And so I started a lighting study, figured out the right photometry to light inside of each one of these panels. which are translucent panels that have been there since 1977, had to figure out the trans material for them. And it was really easy to array this, right? I've got one light source, and I'm going to create 122 iterations for at least one side of that, 122 iterations for the other side, and I suddenly end up with, I've rendered the bridge, right? Well, that's thoroughly boring. I mean, they want an attraction. So, I tend to use spreadsheets on projects like this, and if you have a note here, this is the RGB. This one happens to be red. I've called it the right side, fixture number 0. The right side, fixture number 1, that's white. The right side, fixture number 2, is blue. I can run a number of ways to blend those colors or form by hand. But how do I map those individual lights? Well, this is a function I have never used in radiance. I've used arrays, but I've never used the dash I option, which is which iteration of that array do you want to look at? And so in this case, iteration number 0, hey, map it to the color of right side fixture 0. Iteration number 1, map it to right side color number 1. Do it for 122 fixtures, and now I've got my color system.
Do you want to go there yet?
Yes, I want to go there. So this is obviously renderings on the one side, convince the client that this is what we wanted to do, and a year and a half later, I'm turning this out because the contrast is horrible, and hopefully this will play. This is very simple. This is not a production video. Oh, wrong way. No, I'm not ready for that yet. Sorry. No. I want the lights back. Sorry. Okay, I forgot about the water. So a lot of this river is blocked off because they're building that bridge, but I needed to be able to light the water. And what we've done here is you see there's pictures of being mapped on the water plane. I'm shooting light across and I can't see how it's effect on water. And so Greg made this poem for me. I mean, this is like Greg's magic at its best. And so what it basically is doing is it's taking my picture and it's turning it into a mesh. And as you know, white is made up of RGB. Blue water doesn't have much R. So he used the red channel to bump up wherever it was white on the picture. And we end up with that. Now I can aim my lights on the water. I can show it to a client. I could use it for aiming, figuring out how many I need. I could use it for picking the photometry, how tight are the beams, are they going to blend out of the peak in between or not. And finally end up with, you know, the real deal. So now it's time to go dark. Sorry about this. And this is just a little sequence of opening night on June 1st. I didn't talk about the towers. I designed 3 towers. You should see the only bit of the water there is currently. Eventually it'll be all the way across. The towers are 20 meters, 15 and 12 meters. These are the city's colors right now. On the hour, for the first 5 minutes, the veterans are very important in this town, so I turn it, you know, flag colors for 5 minutes, and then it goes into its program colors for the evening. You see the water work down below. Great fun with Excel spreadsheets. And bless my programmer. Thank you.